Rashini Rajkumar with you. We are live at the Minnesota State Fair. Thanks for spending part of your Sunday with me here on WCCO Radio. You know, now that the summer is kind of on the decline, I hate to say that. It's so humid today. The sun is finally out here at the Minnesota State Fair. But it's true. You know, September, school year starting, and kind of new projects at work. We forget that there is still the sun out there, and the sun can cause damage, as well as other things about our skin that we need to start thinking about. So in light of the fact that the school year is starting for many, already started last week for others, I wanted to ask Dr. Jeremy Cook, who is board-certified dermatologist at Dermatology Consultants, to join me to answer some of those top questions that parents and kids have about skin. Hi, Dr. Cook.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. Thanks for coming out to the fair porch. So acne, it's a bad four-letter word, isn't it?
Yep. Unfortunately, it's basically a universal rite of passage for every teenager out there, and especially as they're heading back to school. There's those first few weeks, they definitely want to be looking good. So having bad acne is not a good way to start.
Yeah, you know, it's not. And it's not only something, too, that stays with you in childhood or teenage years, right? You can get this later in life also.
Yeah, especially adult women, about 10 to 15% of adult women will continue to have ongoing bouts with acne, and not just, you know, plugged pores and small pimples, but deeper cysts and lesions that can leave scars.
It sounds disgusting, Dr. Cook. So what's causing this? What is causing it?
In adult women, it's almost universally hormoned. So as the hormone cycle for women, different surges and different hormones trigger these deeper cystic lesions, mostly along the chin and jawline, but sometimes in other areas as well. And so for those women, getting the hormones more regulated can be really helpful.
So let's talk about kids again. So as they are getting ready to go to school and things like that, or even out here at the fair for the last couple of days, is there anything that they can do to either have, you know, cleaner skin, to prevent acne, or is the washing of the face really not the cure?
Well, you know, especially when it's hot like this, you really do need to clean your face well. So usually I'll recommend a gentle cleanser. You don't necessarily need something strong that's going to strip all the oil out of your skin, but just something to get the oil and debris off your face. You know, twice a day sometimes isn't enough for some patients. So there are, you can get medicated facial wipes that you can throw in a backpack or a soccer bag. And as soon as you get done, you know, as soon as you get done at the fair, you can wipe down before you have a chance to get home and wash your face.
It sounds like often we hear about Accutane being the gold standard for serious acne. Is Accutane a good remedy, or, you know, I've also heard some controversy around it.
Yeah, so Accutane is a very misunderstood drug. Accutane itself actually is no longer made. The generic isotretinoin is what we use, but everybody still calls it Accutane. It is a great medication for acne, especially severe acne or acne that hasn't responded to more conventional treatments. There are some side effects associated with it, but most typically people have dry skin, dry lips, maybe a few muscle aches, rather than severe side effects. Some things that people worry about, mood changes, association with what we call inflammatory bowel disease. But as we're seeing more and more evidence come out, the evidence really is in favor of the medication not necessarily being associated with these things in most cases.
I'm talking with Dr. Jeremy Cook of Dermatology Consultants. He is a board certified dermatologist. If you have any questions for him about acne or skin cancer or something that's on your skin and you're kind of curious what it could be, give us a text, 81807, or feel free to call 866-989-9226 or 651-989-9226. I want to spend some time talking about the whole skin cancer thing because it is summer. People have heavy exposure all over the body, not just the face, to the sun. What are you seeing? What are still some of the myths that you would like to bust?
Well, you know, I think there's still teens out there tanning. Fortunately, in Minnesota, we have legislation that helps prevent that. So that's the major thing I'd like to see go away. I still have patients come in and I ask about tanning and they say, oh no, I don't tan.
Just when you say tanning, meaning in like a tanning booth?
In a tanning booth, yep. and they'll say, oh, I just tan before I go on vacation to get a base so I don't get burned. And really, there's a preponderance of evidence that suggests that isn't helpful, and you're just doing damage to your skin.
So that's a good thing to remember. I hear a lot of people do that before they go on spring break.
Yep, for sure.
All right, what are some other things that maybe someone's living with some sort of cancer and they don't even know it? What are some signs?
So with skin cancer, typically you're looking for kind of that funny mole, the ugly duckling per se. We talk about the ABCDEs of melanoma, so asymmetry, irregular borders, multiple colors, especially dark black, anything that's bigger than the size of a pencil eraser or changing over time. For the non-melanoma skin cancers, you're looking for a pimple that doesn't heal, a sore that won't heal, anything that bleeds with minimal trauma or is growing or tender over time.
Okay, so when we are thinking about our skin, what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see across the board?
In terms of biggest mistakes, for I would say for skincare in general, I think people tend to use cleansers that are too harsh for their skin, especially as we head into fall and that forced air comes on for heating. People really dry out, and if they're using their antibacterial soap, they're really going to get their skin in trouble. In terms of sunscreen and skin cancer, I think people still under-apply sunscreen, whether it's the quantity they apply or how frequently they reapply it. If you're going to the beach, you really need to be applying it every 80 minutes if you're sweating or swimming. So sometimes it's better to use an alternative like a sun protective shirt. Rash guards are kind of back in fashion. You can find them anywhere. J. Crew, a lot of popular retailers have them, and they're definitely better than sunscreen because they don't wash off.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing the technology these days, right? And even people in athletics and sports, they should be thinking about that protective clothing.
Oh, for sure. I played an alumni soccer game in high school the other weekend, and I had put my sunscreen on, and I walked by the team, and I got about 10 feet by, and they said, "Who has sunscreen on?" Like they had never smelt anybody put sunscreen on before a soccer game. So clearly there's some education that needs to happen among teens, and especially as it relates to being involved in sports outside.
And what about someone who is maybe more senior, they have actually experienced skin cancer? Is it something that's always going to stay with them, or can it be healed and treated?
Most skin cancers can be healed and treated. The problem is once you've had, you know, a melanoma skin or non-melanoma skin cancer, the risk of having another is about 50% within the next 5 years. A lot of that's damage done from the past that's kind of working its way out. So if you take steps to kind of protect yourself from the sun and do a good job with skincare, over time that tends to slow down and we see less problems for those patients.
All right. Thanks so much, Dr. Jeremy Cook. He is a board-certified dermatologist with Dermatology Consultants. You can look him up on Dermatology Consultants' website. Always great to get your healthy information.
Thanks so much for having me.
We've got yet more amazing guests coming up. I just saw Senator Al Franken walk into our green room. He's coming up at 2:35. He'll be on the porch and always taking your questions and texts for him. Coming up after the break, Stephen Yock. He is author of Becoming George Washington. We are back, Rashini Rajkumar, at the State Fair, and I've been looking forward to talking to my next guest for weeks. We've been planning this segment. I just have been learning all of these things about our first president, George Washington, which will blow your mind, people. He is here. He is Stephen Yock. He is author of Becoming George Washington. We have a great book cover out here, so if you're out here, you can take a look at that or take a picture. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rashini. It's awesome being with you at the fair.
Now, you're a lawyer by trade. What made you want to write about George Washington?
You know, first of all, it's kind of, I've always been a history buff, and I've always been fascinated by him. I think the really cool thing about him that stuck with me is he just kept giving up power over and over again. And, you know, after the revolution, after his presidency, he was offered made king twice. And so I started researching why, and that pushed me back into his youth. And how he became George Washington is what this is about. And it's an amazing story that I didn't know. And once I knew, I couldn't help but write it.
All right, so lots of interesting, sometimes salacious details.
Yeah.
Let's first start with his mother, okay? Every guy has mother issues. Let's just face it, right?
Okay.
And for better or worse, that's good for your wife or not. His mother did not go to his wedding. His mother did not go to his inauguration, which, by the way, was the first inauguration of the first president of the United States of America. What gives?
Well, you're right. He's different than Bill Clinton or Barack Obama, who get along great with their moms. His mother and he never got along. She wanted him to stay on the farm. She never wanted him to leave. And ironically, while a lot of mothers sort of push their kids along, her desire to keep him on the farm is what ultimately drove him away. He wanted more than anything to get off the farm. And ironically, despite the fact that he was a dutiful son and did his best to take care of her, she complained from pretty much the moment of his birth until her death, all along. So they never got along.
Wow, but he had good brothers, correct?
He did. He had wonderful brothers, both older and younger, who he was really, really close to. In fact, Lawrence Washington was his closest brother, inherited Mount Vernon, and then gave it to George when he died. So George really modeled his life on his older brother, Lawrence. And in fact, you can go see his picture in Mount Vernon if you went there right now.
Very nice. And your brother is here today supporting you. So
my brother's wonderful, too.
Keeping it in the family. So one of the big areas of your book that I think people, it might not sit too well with people, the book Becoming George Washington, is that you write about his affair with Sally. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I should just tell your listeners, I have tremendous respect for George, and if you read the book, you'll see how much I like him. But he was a passionate young man, and all historians agree he was in love with Sally Fairfax. She was a married woman, indirect family relative. And the question is whether or not it was ever consummated. This is a novel. And so I take some liberties, maybe as he did. But
just because it's more fun that way, right?
Right. But there is, my book lays out the factual support, and there's a lot for it. And between you and me, I kind of hope he did. He was a dutiful guy the rest of his life, so maybe he had a
little
fun.
Because we can't really know 100%.
We can never know.
But there's some great evidence to say yes.
That's exactly right. And I do lay that out in the book, and we're never going to know because George and Sally are both smart enough to never admit it.
And did he love Martha? I think we want to know.
Yeah, with all his heart. First of all, I want to be clear that this affair, if it happened, was before he got engaged to Martha.
Okay, that's good
to
know.
So he didn't cheat on Martha.
Right.
Okay.
So it was not an extramarital affair.
Well, it was for her.
For her. But
not for George.
Well,
George was the good
guy.
Yeah,
okay. All right. So, yeah. All right. Well, let's sit with you. I'm speaking with author of Becoming George Washington, Stephen Yock. And one reviewer says this about the book, Becoming George Washington. This is the reviewer speaking now. One of my favorite things about the historical fiction genre is when the author makes the readers feel as if they have stepped through time and are walking alongside their subjects through important moments in history. Yock achieves this, drawing readers in as flies on the wall, drinking in lesser known details of a president most people think they know. Did you like my dramatic
reading?
That
was very good. You know, you should read for a living.
Well, I think that is an ultimate compliment,
Steve. Thank you. It was really awesome and fun doing it. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So what were some of the things that even surprised you about George Washington?
Well, first of all, he's not the stiff dollar bill dude. He's not he's not this. In fact,
That's a good soundbite.
Right. He's George Washington dancing machine. From pretty much his earliest life until almost before he died, he loved to dance. He loved to ride. He loved to fox hunt. He loved to play cards. He was a really fun, extroverted guy. He didn't talk a lot. He had bad teeth, which he did have. So he didn't talk a lot. But he just had a lot of fun, and he really loved being with people. I was surprised he wasn't as stiff as he seems later in life.
Well, as you know, I'm a communication coach and I work with business people, sometimes politicians, and often I'm working with my clients on image and how they look. One of my favorite facts about George Washington is about his hair. Tell us about that.
Well, first of all, his hair was always his own. So when we see him in the dollar bill, that's actually his hair.
And he had great hair.
He did have great hair. He had gray hair later on. He had sort of auburn hair as a young man, but he powdered it later on. You know, I would have been great in the olden days because if you're bald, you could have just worn a wig.
Right, because that was the point. Men wore wigs because they were bald or didn't really like their hair, right?
Right, exactly. And also there was hygiene issues and everything else.
Ooh.
And George was always really careful about his hygiene. He was always careful about how he dressed. and it is to your image, he was an imposing physical figure. He was 6'3", which would be equivalent to 6'9 or 10 now. He was a huge guy.
So you have shared with us that he danced, he was a social guy. What were some of his favorite things, though? I mean, what do you think really led him to become the leader that we know him to have become?
Well, I think fundamentally what led him to be the leader is he never stopped trying. George evolved from the day he was born until the day he died. He constantly was learning, constantly reading, constantly pushing. And part of that grew out of an insecurity of two things. One, to get away from his mom, as we talked about. And two, he didn't have a formal education. And so he always felt insecure about it. And that pushed him every single day of his life. He was a better writer the day before he died than he was 2 days before he died. He improved his writing every day. And he was really a remarkable guy.
Yeah, and you sound like you have some great affection for him, Steve.
I do. You know, most people, a lot of politicians were sort of born to wealth, or some of our more recent presidents. George grew up, his dad died when he was 11, and he had this difficult mother, and yet he overcame it all. So it is a truly remarkable story. So that by the time he's president, why it's becoming George Washington, the book, because by the time he's president, he is fully formed. He's gone through the crucible of adversity. And he really is the guy capable of leading the revolution and becoming our indispensable man.
You know, great lessons when you talk about his childhood and the challenges. It's really great inspiration for our young people today. As school is getting started, a lot of people starting on Tuesday to go back. As you know, Senator Franken is my final guest on the show today, coming up at 2:35. I want to ask you, as I will ask him, what are your thoughts and what do you think George Washington would think about today's presidential race?
He would hate it. And I'll tell you simply why. George hated parties. He's the only guy to be elected president unanimously twice. Again, the solution that Alexander Hamilton was, well, then let's make you king. But he didn't like parties. He didn't like factions. While Madison and others really understood that our republic required it, and it's important in the battlefield of ideas. Washington, his entire life, found politics unappetizing, found politicians, he didn't like them that much, and yet, ironically, he was one. He may not have liked it, but he was one. George wouldn't like our political process, but I think actually he'd be proud to see that the country he built and the bureaucracy that he established is still going strong 200 years later.
I almost forgot to show everybody here on the porch your book. So his book, Steve Yock's book, is Becoming George Washington. I kept it in plastic so it wouldn't get rained on earlier today. And people can signing coming up in about a month, October 5th at 7 p.m. Tell us about that. Where is that at?
Yeah, that's at Common Good Books in St. Paul. I also have another book signing at Barnes & Noble now on October 24th at 2 p.m. which is a Saturday. So all that information is available on my website, which is becominggeorgewashington.com.
Excellent. Steve Yock, best luck to you with this book, Becoming George Washington. Some good teasers for it today. I'm interested. I've been reading it to get
Great.
Ready for you. But really fun to learn also about the massive amount of work that goes into something like this.
It was just a joy to do it. And thanks for having me on, Rashini. It's awesome.
Thank you, Steve. And when we come back, we'll talk to Senator Al Franken. Rashini Rajkumar winding down the show this Sunday, September 6th, at the Minnesota State Fair. Thanks for spending part of your Sunday with me and WCCO Radio. Always great. We've had just a fabulous State Fair porch audience. Can I get a whoop whoop from our audience? Yep, it just keeps on growing. Senator Franken is my final guest of the show today, and he always draws a crowd, and lots to talk about with him. So I will get right to it. Senator Franken, welcome back.
Thank you, Rashini.
It's great to have you here. You just got back from Africa.
I did about a week ago, yeah.
Why were you there?
Well, a number of reasons. I'm on the energy committee, so I was looking at a lot of energy projects over there. We have a big East African community here in Minnesota. So I was in Ethiopia, went to a transit center where I met with refugees who are coming from Somalia and from South Sudan and Eritrea. And a very, very interesting trip. I went to Senegal, Ethiopia, Rwanda, Gabon, and a country called Cabo Verde, which is off the west coast of Africa. Saw a lot of different things, and came away with one big observation about the different way that we and China approach the continent. We do aid through things like the Millennium Challenge Corporation and through the Overseas Private Investment Act, where we give a little bit of funding for projects like there's a project in Rwanda, which is a solar, biggest solar array. It's gonna that does provide 8% of Rwanda's energy, electricity. We put about $400,000 into a $23 million project, and it, it's a partnership with non-governmental organizations and also the government of Rwanda, but also private companies. And this was done by, actually by a solar company from Israel. But one of the things that both of these organizations, the Millennium Challenge Corporation and the Overseas Private Investment Coalition, or what they do, or corporation, I'm sorry, is they only give out aid to countries that are improving in things like governance, civil society, and getting rid of corruption. The Chinese are the exact opposite in a way. That what they do is they come into a country and they say, we'll build a soccer stadium for you, a $350 million soccer stadium. And then they give a big bribe to the president of the country and others. And in exchange, under the table, they get mineral rights. And they bring in our projects, we have a lot of engineers from the country. In Senegal, we did on a water project in...
Senator, is it hard to compete with that?
It is hard to compete with that.
That's my first inclination.
So we're sort of 180 degrees opposite each other. And we're sort of the white hats, and they're the dark hats. And the dark hats are eating lunch.
I mean,
lunch.
We're probably not that innocent, but I'm sure we're not doing this.
No, but if we actually are. We're trying to build capacity for people in Africa to do this work themselves. That's why we're using. That's why they take charge of the project. That's why they are providing the engineers and the highly skilled labor there, and the Chinese just bring in Chinese workers and Chinese engineers.
I'm talking with Senator Al Franken. If you want to chat with him, you certainly can. Give us a text, 81807, if you have a question for him. Also, I have a text already coming in, and to respond to this texter about you being on in the airtime, I want to remind this texter that last Sunday we had Congressman Tom Emmer on for the last guest of the show. So I try to balance it out between the Republicans and the Democrats.
Sure.
Senator Franken, it's a heady time right now in Washington. We've got 17 Republicans, a dozen or so Democrats, maybe not quite a dozen, running for the presidency. I'm curious, how is the work getting done in our United States Congress, in the Senate, in Washington, when all of us are consumed by this very chaotic presidential race? I just love your take on that.
Well, I mean, that's a bit of a frustration to me in this country, is that there's so much attention to the horse race in presidential politics that we have sort of an endless campaign. To me, and the media doesn't really cover the nuts and bolts of our public policy and real very important issues like our education and infrastructure. When we go back, we have to pass funding for a long-term infrastructure bill. We passed a six-year bill in the Senate. The House didn't take it up. They passed a three-month extension, as we had to, in order to keep funding our highway bills, our highways, and other infrastructure. We have to do that. We have to address our revenue, the way we do our tax policy. We have to have a budget by the end of the 30th of September, or again go on a continuing resolution and kick the can a little bit forward.
Well, speaking of budget, Senator Franken, I'm reminded of a poll that happened this past week that I mentioned at the top of the show, and I don't know what the numbers are today, but in this poll, Donald Trump 23%. Dr. Ben Carson, 23% in this latest poll of the Republican contenders. Both of these people.
Where was it?
Well, it was just a national poll, and forgive me, I don't remember the name of the organization. But the point of my question is, here are these two people, non-politicians, haven't held the kind of offices that a lot of the other contenders have held. I'm wondering, are the American people saying we don't want career politicians leading us anymore?
I think there is a lot of frustration among a lot of people about what they see as gridlock in D.C. and elsewhere. So there is an appetite maybe for someone who doesn't have that experience. But remember, this is in the Republican Party. And this is...
We've got some time, 14 months out.
There's plenty of time. This is what is... There's so much coverage goes to the horse race and to the personalities.
Right. That's what
not
it is
enough
exactly.
To the issues that are facing us. And I would like to have the media put more focus on the issues that are actually before us and that we're legislating. It might make it easier to get our work done in Congress.
One of the things that I know you're proud of, and you launched this week, the Veterans History Project with the Library of Congress. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, they actually launched it in 2001, but I've been emphasizing it at my booth.
And you really want to get Minnesota vets involved.
Yeah, I want Minnesota vets' voices involved in that. These are being archived, and these are our veterans. They can be written journals. Jim Claremont is a 90-year-old veteran of World War II, and he was in the Navy. And I presented him with the French Legion of Honor. That's the highest medal from the French, because he had taken part in the invasion of Normandy. And he had written journals during the war, and he hadn't sent it in. He was actually a very, very good writer. Great guy.
Treasure trove that is.
Yeah. So this is the Library of Congress. It has been archiving this since these journals and videos, and we're trying to teach people to do that kind of archiving. So interview your dad or yourself if you're a veteran, or have someone do that.
Yeah, and get it on video. It's a very cool thing. We're going to have to take a real quick break. More with Senator Franken and your text, 81807, when we come back. Rashini Rajkumar back with you. Senator Al Franken is here on the porch. Always lots to talk about with you, Senator Franken. I know that veterans are so important to all of us. I really take my hats off to them. I honor them. So this Veterans History Project, which you are promoting, here's a little brochure at your booth.
Yep.
People can easily get involved. I think what's really neat about it is you can sit down with your neighbor, a family friend, your dad, your mom, your sibling who is a vet, and record that interview. I think that is so grassroots.
Let me give a website for that.
Yeah, so please do.
www.loc, that stands for Library of Congress, .gov /vets.
I love it. Well, your people have put together a good brochure because it's educating both of us today.
Yeah,
up
but
here
I,
on
you
the porch.
Have a large audience.
We have
I want
a lot.
Them
thank
to hear
you.
That.
We have a large audience. Say it one more time.
www.loc.gov/vets. And there's photographs, two-dimensional artwork, not three. letters, official military documents, unpublished memoirs, diaries or journals,
kinds of things. I think what would be great next year is if we can bring you back and maybe get someone from the Library of Congress on the phone and we can really hear where is this at this point.
We could probably do that.
Think you could make that happen?
Yeah.
You know people?
We got a year. I know people.
All right.
At least I know people who know people.
You do. I'm opening up the text lines, 81807. If there's anyone in the fair audience who has a question, just come right up to the porch. I'll give you the mic, and you can ask the senator any question you have for him. It's not every day he's this close to you, people, 10 feet away. So if you have any questions or comments, please share.
Like, where are the pork chops?
I know where they are, by the way. Do you have a question? All right. Excellent. The beautiful lady in the front. Your name?
Jan.
Jan, where are you from?
Mankato. Okay. This is... back on your question, which I didn't think was fully answered. Because of all the time that is spent by candidates trying to get reelected, do you think that there should be a limit on how
long. Term limits?
Not a term limit. A limit on
the duration or the spending?
The spending and the time that you can spend on campaigning.
Good question from Jan.
Well, those are two separate questions. In terms of spending, our campaign finance system is
a mess.
Completely screwed up. And one of the worst decisions, I think, that was made was the Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court, which virtually makes it unlimited money. And so since we can't regulate that, it's very hard to put other limits on it. I mean, I could go for public financing of campaigns, and then you can qualify for public financing if you get so many signatures, thousands of signatures, et cetera. There's a lot of ways to do that and to slice it. As far as the amount of time people spent campaigning, I think that I don't know how you would regulate that. I mean,
I would love to give them a deadline, just like we have election day. Let's say, okay, 6 months out from that is the beginning of campaigning day. We can do it. If any country can do it, it's this country. The problem is this has gotten so political, and it is this horse race that you talk about.
It depends what you consider campaigning. Is fundraising campaigning? Well, if it is, and you say you can't do any fundraising before six, then you get into all kind of constitutional problems. Also, if it's not called campaigning, you can call it official business. But those are all very murky.
But Jan's point is a good one. You'd agree. I mean, it's just getting a little crazy.
Well, no, in Great Britain, they have very short periods for electing the prime minister. And they have a parliamentary system, of course. So they have parliamentary elections. And they take only like a couple months, and it's very.
That would be great. I'm going to look into this. We're going to get someone from Great Britain on the show this fall. I have to ask you this because I am a believer in term limits. I think that our framers, absolutely, our framers, wanted you to come out of private life, serve your country, go back into private life, get the heck out of Washington. Okay.
Okay, that's not actually the case.
Well, okay, well,
because if you look at our founding fathers, all of them were in public service except for Benjamin Franklin. Every one of them.
No, but they weren't holding office that whole time.
Well,
they were in public service,
many
right?
of them held, they were in the House of Burgesses. Thomas Jefferson was a state legislator.
All right, I'm getting schooled here by Senator Franklin.
The only one of our founding fathers really who wasn't involved in public policy. I mean, John Adams was a lawyer who defended the British troops during after the Boston Massacre, but he also wrote the key documents in No Taxation Without Representation. But the only one who really wasn't that involved in public matters that much in the sense that the others were was Benjamin Franklin, who, if you think about it, was a comedy writer.
Wow.
He wrote Poor Richard's Almanac.
Look at you. All right.
So I'm making a case now.
Term limits?
No, I'm against term limits.
Let's get back to my question. Because
I'll tell you why I'm against term
limits.
I'll tell you why I'm against term limits. It's because if you know the way Congress works, the House and the Senate, staff have a tremendous amount they play an amazingly key role in crafting legislation, et cetera.
Yes, they do.
And it's good to have members there who have been there a while.
Yeah, I'm not saying you can't get reelected once or twice. I'm just saying I don't know that you should go for 50 years and be in that Congress.
That's very rare. Okay. I don't think there's been. I can't think of anyone.
All right, I'm gonna do a panel on this fall, and I'm gonna have you back because we've got about 1 minute to chat with you. Because this, I get, as you can tell, very fired up about this subject. But Senator Franken, you're heading back. What's in store, real quickly, this fall for you and the U.S. Senate?
Well, we're of course gonna have a vote on the Iran deal. And the question is, are we going to have the 41 votes to prevent it, the president from having to veto it? If that happens and he does veto it, we have the 34 votes to sustain the veto. And so the Iran deal, which I support, is going to go through.
And you've been public about that.
Yeah, well, I've talked about that, and you can go on CNN.com and find
and
my reasoning on that. We're again, as I said, going to have to go try to find a fund a transportation bill. And we're going to have to, by September 30th, find a way to fund the government going forward. And whether that's a short-term continuing resolution or a budget, appropriating a budget for the whole fiscal year of 2016, that's the question.
All right. I always like to wind down on a fun note. I have to say we're winding down our last minute with Senator Franken. Next week, I'm talking with Crisis Meister Lanny Davis. He's represented Bill Clinton. He's represented Martha Stewart. Lots to talk about with him. Stephen Colbert debuting his late night show on the 8th this week. Any quick comment on that?
Looking very forward to it. I know Stephen. He's a brilliant guy. When it was announced that he was going to replace Letterman, I wrote him an email saying, see, I told you you couldn't sustain that character.
All right. Senator Franken, thanks so much. He was my first guest 4 years ago at my very first state fair.
That's
great,
right,
to have you today.
Good to see you, Rashini.
All right. And I will be back next week in the studio. Rashini Rajkumar signing out. Make it a fabulous week.